The Yemeni government says the illegal seizure of Yemeni oil is an act of war and a violation of Yemen's sovereignty, which will be met with force if continued. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
As they came together for a summit in Brussels, EU leaders were acutely aware that energy storage tanks will run dry in the coming months. There are still major divisions in the EU over a gas price cap and a proposal to buy energy from international suppliers as one single customer.
It is important that we do not outbid each other as member states, but that we use the market power to purchase gas.
It's thought a deal might be finalised on Monday. There are plenty of other divisions within the 27-nation EU. Austria is blocking Romania and Bulgaria from the border-free Schengen area. Meanwhile, funding for Hungary is being withheld over rule of law issues.
Russia is blackmailing us every day. But if we start to blackmail each other, this is not good. And this is absolutely not good for the European Union.
A dark shadow of corruption is hanging over the EU. It emerged last Friday that Qatar has been bribing politicians and officials.
This scandal is a very serious matter indeed, which can shake trust in democracy and the parliamentary system. Thus, it is good that the Belgian authorities are thoroughly investigating.
At their summit, EU leaders refused to be drawn on the question of possible sanctions against Qatar. However, they signed off on more sanctions against Russia and also Iran. The leaders agreed to provide at least 20 billion euro to Ukraine in 2023. Campaigners say they should be doing more for their own citizens.
So many people in poverty, like everything what's going on from the crisis from 2008 until now, nothing changed.
It's clear that things could soon get a lot worse if the EU fails to secure a reliable long-term energy source at the right price. The costly Ukrainian refugee crisis is also growing by the day. So the final EU leaders' summit of 2022 has now concluded. Analysts say the unprecedented challenges they will face in 2023 could stretch the EU project beyond breaking point. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
While the West is expanding sanctions against Moscow and Iran over their military cooperation, the potential for developing relations between the two countries is huge, since Russia and Iran are under tough Western sanctions and therefore have little to fear.
The will of our governments is interconnected. Our high-ranking officials and our peoples do not pay attention to the shouts of the entire West and continue to strengthen their ties and interaction.
At the press conference held in Moscow, Iran's ambassador to Russia summed up the outcome of relations between Moscow and Iran in 2022. He noted that Russia's ruble is used in more than 40% of trade between the two countries and that the Russian currency may become the main one in bilateral trade. According to his remarks, Tehran supported the idea of using the ruble as the main currency in regional unions such as the EAEU. He also referred to efforts to integrate the national payment systems MIR and Shetab as part of financial and economic cooperation between Russia and Iran. According to the Iranian envoy, Russia and Iran are seeking to reduce the dominance of certain currencies, including the dollar, in bilateral trade and economic relations. Jalali further said the automotive industry and space sector have become another field of cooperation between the two countries. In August, Russia launched remote sensing satellite Hayam into orbit on behalf of Iran.
As for our negotiations, I want to say that negotiations between our respective organizations in the field of outer space are ongoing on a regular basis.
Iran is investigating the possibility of producing cars jointly with Russia. Two leading automakers of the Islamic Republic, Saipan and Iran Hadro, took part in last summer's exhibition in Moscow and held negotiations with the Russian side. In addition to the joint production, the two countries are also discussing the possibility of sending Iranian cars to Russia. Russian and Iranian officials have time and again said that the two countries are determined to further expand bilateral cooperation. They have expressed confidence that the aim will materialize despite all the challenges the two nations might face, given the numerous capacities the two sides have. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
In a mass rally and under a sea of green flags, men and women from all walks of life came out to take part in Hamas's 35th anniversary celebration. Hamas, who was founded in 1987, won the Palestinian parliamentary elections in January 2006, but remains blacklisted by the European Union and the United States for refusing to recognize the Israeli regime. The movement has fought several wars against the Israeli regime since 2007. The resistance movement said that Al-Quds is at the center of the Palestinian struggle for freedom.
Hamas asserts today that Al-Quds is at the core of our struggle against the Israeli occupation. We're also sending a message of Palestinian unity. As we mark this day, we want to thank all Muslims and Arabs who support the Palestinian people, especially the Axis of Resistance.
People from all walks of life attending the rally called on all Palestinian factions to increase the resistance against the Israeli occupation to bring about the liberation of Al-Quds.
We will continue to support Hamas and the resistance until we liberate every inch of our land. We call on the Muslim nation to support Palestine and to support Al-Quds. People came out today to send a strong message of support to the resistance against the Israeli occupation.
Hamas supporters said they want the Israelis to know that the Islamic Resistance Movement is a force to be reckoned with.
We are here today to express our support to Hamas on its anniversary and to tell the whole world that Palestinians are supporting the resistance. Hamas has a very strong military wing that continues to grow. Hamas, along with all the resistance factions, will continue to fight for the sake of Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
35 years on, Hamas continues to garner support due to its adherence to armed resistance against the Israeli regime.
People here say that despite years of siege and multiple wars, Hamas movement has managed to defy all odds and survive all attempts to weaken it. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
The implementation of a comprehensive strategic partnership between China and Iran is getting a kickstart as a high-ranking delegation headed by the Chinese Vice Premier Hu Chunhua meets with Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi in Tehran. After his meeting with the Iranian president, the Chinese top official met with Iran's finance minister, where the two sides signed 16 MOUs to boost cooperation in different fields. Oil and gas, banking, investment, and strategic projects are the four fields of economic cooperation that are now on top of the agenda. There has already been a roughly 20% increase in trade, and the outlook for 2023 is even higher, according to Iran's finance minister. China is still Iran's biggest oil client, despite Washington's bid to bring Tehran's exports down to zero. And its close involvement in the built-out of Iran's manufacturing infrastructure is seen entirely in line with its Belt and Road Initiative. Analysts say this could represent a shift in the global balance of the oil and gas sector and create new markets where no U.S. dollars are involved.
Iran-China relations date back to the ancient Silk Road. Both countries have always had close ties, but over the past couple of years, their relations have become even more significant, with the U.S. putting pressure on China on the one hand and placing sanctions on Iran on the other. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
The Supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging. And to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless Thou forgives it, and leave no grief unless Thou takes it away, and leave no enemy, and leave no enemy unless Thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names, in the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is his anger, and I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is his good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from thee, O patron of beneficence.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story. In
what is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The delegation of the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, is in Iran's capital, Tehran, to discuss the so-called outstanding issues, including the agency's probe. This visit came when, just one day earlier, Iran's nuclear agency chief, Islami, said the country's capacity to enrich uranium has more than doubled in its entire history, up to 60%, and that's up from 3.67% allowed under the nuclear deal. Now, why would Iran make that announcement now, and what will be the reaction of the IAEA, along with the U.S. and the EU, for that matter? Can't forget Israel either. Those are some of the key questions we'll be asking in this edition of The Spotlight. First, let me introduce our guests. Fuad Izadi, professor at the University of Tehran, joins us from Tehran. Also joining us is Yusuf Azizi, international affairs expert, who joins us from Washington, D.C. Welcome to you both. Fuad Izadi, I'll first start with you. Welcome to the program. Taking a look at the IAEA statement on this visit, it has said it's at the invitation of Iran, and it's a technical team that's going to be visiting, that's visiting Tehran. Basically, taking a look at just the invitation itself, given the fact that Iran has extended that invitation, doesn't that show Iran's goodwill and gesture and willingness to actually cooperate with the agency after everything that it's been through? And we're going to discuss some of that in order to, as Mr. Islami said, to straighten out any ambiguities or questions that the IAEA may have.
You know, this is actually going beyond what we just described. We know that IAEA director coordinates his statements and his actions with the Israeli entity. He visited Israel a few months ago. He is in contact with Israeli officials constantly. He basically repeats what he hears from the Israelis. And for Iran to be working with this particular individual is going much beyond normal concessions that the country would generally give. And it has been the decision of Iranian officials to engage in these type of contacts to make sure that no one could accuse Iran of not cooperating with IAEA, even with this director of IAEA. So Iran is going beyond any reasonable and logical action. As you know, Iran is inspected more than any other country in the world. And sooner or later, I think Iranian officials will get tired of this type of behavior that we see from IAEA. And I think the window of opportunity that IAEA has to continue to work with Iran is not very long.
Okay, so that's a key way of putting it towards the end there that I'd like to ask you, Yusuf Azizi. as to when is Iran going to get tired? I mean, we're looking at this invitation that was extended by Iran coming on the heels of, in a matter of 6 months, two resolutions were executed against Iran by the Board of Governors of the IAEA, given the fact, of course, the country behind it was the U.S. mainly. But even after that, Iran still said, okay, let's give the IAEA an invitation to come to Iran in order to, again, clear up any questions or ambiguities. But the key question here being, when will Iran get tired, do you think?
So as we know, the Iran's precondition to revive the JCPOA, one of the preconditions is to resolve this allegation against Iran's nuclear program. There is three cases or documents against Iran that recently adopted by some members, like Israel's government against Iran. But I believe that never ever in the near future, the Iran and the IAEA will finish their cooperation, because as long as Iran is part of the NPT, Iran do whatever it can under the NPT. So going beyond or even in the 60% enrichment of uranium, it's not against the NPT. So Iran is still cooperate with IAEA, and we know that also European countries, they agreed about 3 months ago in August that, okay, these three documents against Iran allegations should be resolved before the whole JCPOA revived and all of the countries go back to the their obligations. But again, the United States put some issues against this condition that all of the parties agreed on that. So my understanding is that Iran and the IAEA would, cooperate in a level that it's not going to finish everything, because the finishing everything is mean that Iran go out of the NPT and the European countries, put end at the for the JCPOA and all of the sanctions, the UN sanctions, go back to the Iran. So I think no parties would like to go to that kind of situation. It is not in the benefit of either parties. And this kind of negotiation, this kind of talking to resolve these issues is necessary for all sides. We don't know if the United States, after the election, the Congress election, the midterm election in the United States last November, if the United States is now going to resolve these little and small phrases, disagreement phrases in the final reviving agreement, because we know that right now and in the next 2 or 3 months, the Biden administration has open-handed to revive the JCPOA. If they are not going and they are not deciding very diligently to revive the JCPOA, again, the United States domestic policies go to the loop of the presidential election and the primary election of the U.S. president in 2024, and again, the Biden administration cannot revive the JCPOA.
All right, let's talk about what happened a day earlier, Fouad Azadi, and that was a major announcement that Iran made, where the Iran's nuclear agency chief said the country's capacity, from what I'm reading, to enrich uranium has more than doubled in its entire history, of which the enrichment has reached the level of 60%. That's something that was due not to be in the deal itself, but because the U.S. pulled out of it. So Iran did have the right to do what it has done. Why do you think Iran decided to make that announcement one day before the IAEA arrived in the capital, Tehran?
You know, Iran was following JCPOA more than one year after United States left the agreement. So I think if it wasn't for Iran, we would not have any JCPOA. And the Biden administration has been in office for almost 2 years. And Biden could return to the agreement on the first day of his presidency, the same way he returned to the Paris Climate Accords on his first day of presidency. He could just nullify Trump's executive order. The new presidents get to do that in the United States if they want to. And he didn't. He wanted to drag his feet and keep talking, keep demanding new things. And the end result is that a lot of Iranian leaders are realizing that just waiting for the United States on these issues is not in the national interest of Iran. Iran is a member of NPT, and I'm sure you have read the text. There is no place in NPT that tells you to what percentage you can enrich. It doesn't have the number 60% or 3% or 90%. Countries are allowed to enrich uranium for peaceful purposes to any degree of enrichment that they want. So Iran could do 90% or 95% or 99%. There are no limitations on that in NPT. You know, people who wrote the non-proliferation treaty were experts in nuclear physics, at least some of them were, and they could put that limitation in the text. They decided not to do that, and the end result is that countries like Iran will use whatever enriched uranium they need to have as members of NPT.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this point, but in a different way, if we can, Yusuf Azizi. And I'd like to ask you what has been said before. It's actually a repeated point, but it is worth discussing, that this whole thing is a manufactured crisis, that this is not about Iran's civilian nuclear program or the fact that the statements or the posturing or the views out there were either coming from the U.S. or Israel or any of their allies, that Iran may be after the nuclear bomb or is after the nuclear bomb or weaponization of the nuclear program. That is just all posturing in a sense, and is put out there because they know that Iran's leader has issued a fatwa, at least that's what is known, that it would never pursue that path. So given that premise, what are the points of friction that hasn't been able to work out, if that's even possible to ask a question like that, in order for you to explain it to us?
Yeah, as you said, if it is it was only the Iran nuclear program, it should be resolved in 2003 when the Western countries engaged with Khatami administration, and especially the three European countries, Germany, France, and England, has discussed and negotiated and reached to agreement three times with Iranian administration. But again, the Bush administration at that time, they said that, okay, there is no zero enrichment in Iran. There is some crazy policy of United States. So if it is just the Iran nuclear program, it should be resolved a long time ago. But as you said, I believe that when Iranian announced this progress in their enrichment and in their nuclear capability, it is because that the Western countries right now, especially the United States, sees the negotiation, especially from the Iranian side, as the weaker point, because they see that the unrest, the recent unrest in Iran, weakened the Iranian position on the table. On the other hand, we know that since September, August, when the world knows that the negotiation goes after the United States election in November, each party tried to build some strategic cards to, you know, negotiate later on the table. They didn't go just to, you know, talk to the capital and waste the time. So from the American perspective, I think they find out, or they believe, or they expected that Iranian comes to the negotiation table with the weaker position because of the unrest. And on the other side, the Iranian try to bring the 60% to at Fordo and also use the most advanced centrifuge they built on. So they try to make some strategy card to play on later on the negotiation table. This is my understanding that both sides, all sides, wanted to revive the JCPOA. But the elements in the revival agreement is very important, and we are maybe in the last phases of the reviving this agreement.
Fuad, I was trying to come up with a statement that Iran's leader actually made regarding the riots, as we call it, inside Iran. I believe one of the things that he did say, and I can't paraphrase him, I mean, I can't quote him exactly, so I'm going to have to paraphrase, is the fact that he said that one of the reasons that these riots have occurred and this whole scenario is being played out inside of Iran is because the U.S. wanted to get concessions from Iran that it wasn't getting when the sanction removal talks were happening. And therefore, this was one of their strategies in order for Iran to come to the table and therefore have a weaker hand. They're associating, they call it the protests, we call it riots, they're associating that with getting nuclear concessions. Is that something that is actually happening, do you think?
Well, let me first say that they call, they use the word protesters or protests. Press TV says they are rioting, they are riots. And I think Press TV is too soft, actually. These are vigilantes, criminals that are killing police officers. When you have riots, generally you don't have people killing police officers. You have criminals killing police officers. So calling these people protesters is actually insulting the people who are actually protesting. Protesters don't kill police officers. Rioters don't kill police officers. Criminals kill police officers. Vigilantes kill police officers. You know, the people, a couple of them have been executed. The people who are engaging in these type of activities would not be tolerated in any country. That is what Iran is doing. That's the first point. The second point, yes.
Well noted.
The United States is trying to use what's going on in Iran as a way of pressuring the Iranian government for more concessions. They're failing. The Iranian government is not going to negotiate in this manner under pressure. And what is actually beneficial to a lot of people in Iran is seeing what the West is all about. The hatred that they have towards Muslim women, if they observe the hijab, they are going to be called names in countries like France. They're going to face difficulties in a good number of Western countries. They want to use this issue to put pressure on the Iranian government. And people realize what this is all about. So overall, I think that strategy is failing miserably. And the fact that Iran started an increased level of nuclear activity yesterday is a sign for that statement.
Okay. I just happened to glance over at the time. We just got a few minutes left here. So, Yusuf Azizi, I think one of the things that I need to ask you are the issue of sanctions. Now, it's interesting that the U.S. Special Representative assigned to Iran's case has said that Iran is the one that has walked back and rejected the deal on more than one occasion. You have to ask them why that has happened. But it's interesting how it says, this is, again, something that I'm quoting from him, what we were prepared to do was to lift those sanctions that were supposed to be lifted under the JCPOA, and which had been put back into effect by the Trump administration. And he also says sanctions are not the answer. If he says that, then why is it that there hasn't been an agreement on the sanctions, which Iran says purely and simply that it needs to be lifted?
Yeah, as you know, the Iranian position is that we are going to back to the 2015 JCPOA, not one word less or more. United States tell the same, but it's a little bit different here, and it is because of the different interpretation from both sides. The United States put more sanction as entities and people and persons and everything in Iran, and also it shows that the next administration could easily come out again, and there is no guarantee for United States politics and domestic politics and United States Constitution. There is no guarantee here that United States want to abide by that, any agreement, any international agreement, especially against countries like Iran or mid-level power in the world. So the Iranians said this time, if we revive the JCPOA, there is no countries or major companies to come and invest Iran. It is just only selling some hundred thousand more oil for a limited time. And it is not worth it. It is not worth it that we spend all of this money and efforts to, circumvent the sanction or build on our nuclear power, nuclear energy. And again, because there's no guarantee, because of 1 year or 2 year or maybe 6 months, we just destroy everything. Who is going to pay this, consumption? So there are many arguments here. And I think after this unrest and putting all of these sanctions about the human rights, terrorism, everything else, so we know that if there is a revival on JCPOA, there should be a limited amount of benefits, very, very limited amount of benefit in the time and scope of economic benefits for Iran.
Well, let's have your take on that, Fuadizade, in terms of the way that the sanctions have impacted the economy, because at the other side of the coin, we are entering a new phase when it comes to Iran's interaction with the world in terms of the shift that is happening. But my final question has to be on sanctions also to you, Fuadizade, because as you said, we won't call them riots. The vigilantes and U.S.'s association with that, Robert Malley has said, our focus is on the vigilantes, or that he doesn't call them vigilantes, but we'll call them that. Our focus is on the vigilantes, on what's happening inside of Iran. But when he says that, isn't that then consequential? Because people are not getting life-saving medicines. The sanctions are actually making life harder for that sector that needs that. So isn't that something that the U.S. needs to consider, even though they have said medicine is exempt from sanctions?
Yes, they are exempt from sanctions, but because of banking sanctions, Iran cannot pay for the medicine that the country needs. And in effect, you will have sanctions on medicine. That's what happens in practice. We need to remember that the problem that exists with regard to U.S. returning to JCPOA is the difficulties that the Biden administration has with the U.S. Congress. You have all the Republicans that are opposed to the nuclear agreement, with the exception of one, maybe. And then you have very powerful Democrats like Robert Menendez or Chuck Schumer, people who are leading Democrats in the Senate, that are also opposed. Robert Menendez has said this very clearly for months. And that's the difficulty that the U.S. has. But instead of acknowledging that, they are using other terminologies that are not really helpful.
Thank you very much, Fuadizade, professor at the University of Tehran. Yusuf Azizi, a pleasure, international affairs expert from Washington, D.C. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Vitakwe and the team, it's goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
under the starry sky of the desert. From the very heart of evergreen forests. With the radiance of silver-colored sand. In the midst of proud mountains. Closer, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Attractive to anyone in today's hectic world is that we Iranians have a part in our rich culture which is called Pahlevani culture. I try to define this phrase for you, but believe me, there are many values in Iranian culture which are hard to define for others since they are rooted in the rich history and culture of Iran. Let me say it in this way. Pahlevani culture grows people who are physically strong like a hero or a champion. But at the same time, this culture teaches these heroes to be humble, to have a gentle soul, strong will, and ethical and moral values. This culture is mostly practiced in a sports club called Zurkhane. And the sport which is practiced is called Bastani or Pahlevani sport. This sport is exclusively Iranian. By the way, I am at the subway. I'm going to visit Shahid Fahmide Zurkhane. Well, here we arrived. Pahlevani culture, beginning in ancient Iran, has affected all the nations and countries that once upon a time were part of this great land. Pahlevani culture and sport is an ancient sport rooted in the rich Iranian culture that connects the power of soul and body.
Pahlevani and Zurkhane rituals are one of those traditions which carry a rich ethical culture within. The name has been inscribed by UNESCO for ورزش پهلوانی, heroic sport, or ورزش باستانی, ancient sport, which refers to traditional wrestling or a system of athletics originally used to train Iranian warriors in Persia and the adjacent lands. It combines martial arts, calisthenics, strength training, and music, and pursues a state of spiritual peace and self-control in human's body and mind. Recognized by UNESCO as among the world's longest-running forms of such training, it fuses elements of pre-Islamic Iranian culture, which is clearly seen in Ferdowsi's versified Shahnameh, and later with Islam entering Iran with the spirituality of Shia Islam. Each element in Pahlevani sport represents the humbleness of the athletes doing the sport, their gentle soul, strong will, and powerful body. The ancient sport has been practiced as a means of training warriors for the battlefield since the Achaemenid Empire and was systematized as the sport we see today about 700 years ago. Here I am at Hasanabad Square of Tehran. There is not much left to the Zurkhane and I prefer to take a walk to my destination. There are a few blocks on the northern part of Park Shah. So, here it is. Let's go inside. Of this Zurkhane. The walls are decorated with pictures of athletes, holy places, verses, and war martyrs.
The ceremony has just started. The beginning of the ritual is marked by the murshid, or master, beating a goblet drum. The murshid is the highest rank in the Zurkhane. He sits at the most elevated spot and sings religious tunes, heroic poems from Persian literature and verses of Noble Quran, or repeats names of Shia Imams to pump up the athletes. Then the athletes enter the octagonal pit called the Goud, which is sunken around 1 meter into the floor of Zurkhane. Stone seats are built around the Goud for spectators. Athletes form a circle around a veteran athlete called the Miandar. Then they follow his lead. Zurkhane moves and tunes have an exclusive terminology, and the instruments used by the athletes symbolize ancient weapons. The three main instruments found in every Zurkhane are mills, wooden clubs that resemble war mixes, kapode, an iron rod with a hand grip on one side connected with chains on its ends, which symbolizes bows used in ancient war times, and sang, or enormous heavy panels that resemble shields. Sang literally means stone, and in the past they would be made of stone, but these days they are mainly made of heavy wood. Pahlavani culture can be a beneficent, good, and moral way for living in today's world that is in need of ethical and moral values for the betterment of human beings.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.